Are we really saying
Ben? I'm using the spit thing. What's this thing called? The poofalizer?
Pop filter?
It's a pop filter.
What does
pop
it do? Filter. Stops my what?
Your plosives.
My plosives. There is our losing it.
The Tantrum House Board Game Podcast is recorded live from Studio WKRB in Greenville, South Carolina. This podcast is brought to you by our friendly local game store, Boardwalk, purveyors of fine games, Bezier Games, the new classics, Final Frontier Games, bringing friends and family closer together, The Game Steward, your second chance at Kickstarter games, and Game Toppers LLC, upgrading your gaming experience. Your hosts are Prognosticator Supreme, peering into the swirling mist of future Kickstarters and glimpsing the diamonds in the rough. So buckle up, seriously, especially if you're driving right now, because you're about to arrive at the Tantrum House.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the show. Today, we've got Will Meadows.
Sarah Meadows.
Kevin Dell.
Melissa Dell.
Katie Pills.
Ryan Pills.
And Ben Field.
What is the house? Welcome to the house, Ben. It's a privilege to have you join us.
It's a privilege to be here and an honor.
That's right. It should be. Try not to mess up any because you have to edit this. So
you're not using the pop filter.
I'm sorry. It's hard to look at you and look at the pop filter and the microphone at the same time. We've had some fun already this evening, played a bunch of games. We also did a YouTube Live, which we haven't apparently done in three years.
It was 2016.
A lot of years.
Okay.
And we talked about what, 2 years ago?
3 years ago?
Time
Stories, Prophecy of Dragons, live playthrough.
Okay. And then we just talked today about something that happened about 3 years ago, which was you guys' scenario.
That's right. Melissa and I wrote a scenario that will be coming to your hands, hopefully, Gen Con 2019.
So that's going to be awesome. We're super excited about that one. We need to get some information about that onto our website, because I don't know. Do we? Maybe we do. I don't know.
Okay.
We'll take a look at that. But Ben, you're here hanging out with us. This is great.
It was fun, yeah.
Yeah, we played some technology games.
We had fun with technology. We were geeking out a little bit, or at least I was.
We were. We borrowed a sling from some friends, and we were trying it out just to see how it works, and we had all of our lights and camera and our action going on.
Yeah, Sling Studio, not to be confused with Sling the streaming
TV,
service.
Yeah.
That's good.
Oh, I was thinking, that's weird. I thought that was something to do with TV.
This is actually a product of Dish.
Oh, okay.
Dish. Yeah. Oh, interesting.
Which is also weird to me. But
yeah. They have a sling.
And it worked so well. That's the weird
Dish
part.
Has a sling that they use on their Dish network. It's weird.
So many slings. Confusion everywhere. Well, cool. Why don't we talk about some of the games we were playing tonight? What were you guys playing, Ryan and Katie?
We played different games.
Yes.
Yeah. We didn't play the same games.
Well, why don't we start with Katie then?
Okay. I played Hokkaido.
Ooh, yeah.
Yes, which is a card drafting and map building game.
Cool. From Renegade Game Studios.
Yes, and it is set in some of the early days of Japan. It's basically you get to pull cards out of a hand. Use them to place down to create your map of your settlements and your topography and your landscape. And then you pass the rest of the cards, you know, to the next player, and then they get to choose from that hand. There's some interesting ways of scoring and how you have to balance what you have in your map and some interesting scoring techniques. And it's a pretty fast game. It's for 2 to 5 players, and had a good time playing with
Intern Dan. Right.
I know. I was like, I'm gonna mess this up. Intern Dan and his wife Amy.
Yeah.
And we played, and it was a lot of fun.
Did she seem like she had a good time? She's not a heavy gamer.
Yeah.
So it was awesome that she showed up tonight.
Yeah. She picked it up. She actually beat Intern Dan.
Whoa! Very nice.
So
she actually beat me earlier.
Yes.
When she first showed up, we played Railroad Inc. from CMON that rolled in right. Had a lot of fun with that. She, I think, knew what she was doing. Maybe not. But she really rocked it on those connecting, getting all the entrances connected, whatever that's called, the port of entries or whatever. She pretty much knocked us out of the water, which was great.
Yeah.
Ryan, what were you playing tonight?
we played New Frontiers, A Race for the Galaxy board
Ooh.
Game.
Ooh.
The next edition.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was less complicated
than it looked like a lot of stuff on the table.
But it had some pluses and minuses. One of the big draws was for the card game, as Melissa can expound, everything is cards. So what your goods are cards, your money's cards. Mm-hmm. But with the board game, all of those are their own pieces. So simplifies that concept.
Oh, I saw some interesting looking cube things or something. Were those your resources?
Cool. Those are your resources, yeah.
And they're different sizes, not just different colors. So, like, the one that gives you more in trading is larger.
Actually bigger?
Yeah, I liked that aspect of it. It was a lot of fun. I lost, but it was still pretty cool to see.
The scores weren't terribly...
No, there was a pretty close spread.
Yeah.
I think it was like 56 to 64 or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, Race for the Galaxy is one of the games that got me into the hobby.
Yeah.
So it's cool to see these renditions of it.
I want to let you know, you should feel good because this is my second time playing this game. My first time I got 28 score.
Points.
So. I killed Kevin first
time. She killed me by like triple my score.
Well, this is like
but I beat this
Melissa's
time, so
jam.
I feel okay.
Yes.
This is what Melissa lives for.
Yeah, I love Race for the Galaxy and...
I knew that I could pull out the win because I had an awesome strategy in this game. So
you rate all three of them for us, Melissa. What's your favorite in order?
Ooh,
I'm putting you on the spot with the ratings.
That's hard. I enjoy Race for the Galaxy, the card game, the original, for the how you simultaneously select your actions. And you're trying to think, what's someone else going to do? If I don't develop, will someone else develop? So there's some of that.
Yeah, the mystery is kind of cool in that.
Mystery. It really helps if you know the cards, because then you can think about what cards you want to keep. So experience is really helpful in that one. In Roll for the Galaxy, I think it's a little more accessible once people understand how to use their dice. And it has a little bit more... unpredictability to it, but you can mitigate your dice a lot. So I really do enjoy that one as well. And so I'm not really going to answer
the number order
your,
coming, yeah.
I'm not really going to answer your question. And then New Frontiers.
I'll help you out.
I've only played it twice. I'm still trying to decide if someone's never played any of them, what's going to be the easiest one to enter. Maybe New Frontiers. There's a lot going on still, but like Ryan was saying, because everything is now, there are components for everything that could help some people understand, oh, this is a good and I'm doing stuff. But there's still a lot of icons.
But I would say that the board game does bring more text to explain things.
So you can actually read what you're doing.
Yeah, so you can actually read what you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, and the board game is definitely... kind of a mix of Puerto Rico and the way that you choose your roles, your actions, and then the Race for the Galaxy, like just world and everything that you're doing in that game.
I actually don't like the New Frontiers at two players. I think I'd like it more, even though it's a little longer of a game, I think I'd like it with three or four, personally. Mm-hmm. So, but I like Roll for the Galaxy the best, personally. So that's my number one between the three.
There is something about like, chucking 15 dice into that cup and rolling them.
Yeah.
All right, so why don't we jump from here into our shout-out to our sponsor.
This episode is sponsored by Cackleberry Games. Their game, Gardens of Babylon, is coming to Kickstarter on January 22nd. Later in the podcast, you can hear a little bit more about it because we're having the publisher, Rob Thompson, on as a house guest.
All right, well, next up is our Kickstarter conniption.
Kickstarter conniption!
This episode, we'll be talking about 11 games coming to Kickstarter the week of January 21st, 2019. Start us off, Kevin.
January 24th, Colossal Games is bringing actually three games to one campaign from John Claudis. They've actually done some other games with him. But these are three sort of like small box games. One is Neolithic, And there's a worker placement mechanism, some light engine building. The second in the three is Merchants of I can't say.
Good luck with that.
Muziris?
Muziris. I don't know.
Anyway, it's a role selection game and some set collection. And then the third game is a drafting game called Keep. And it's got this, like, castle sort of box cover. It's pretty cool looking. And,
Are those all three in one campaign? Yeah, or are those three different campaigns?
All three in one campaign.
Okay, interesting.
So, I think because they're so small, the boxes are so small, that they're able to get a really good price for them all.
And
so.
That's the designer of the Omen games?
Omen, yes. Yep. And so there's a bunch of games in the Omen series. So, Melissa, what's your first one?
On January 21st, Junk Spirit Games is bringing Battle of the Bards. This is for 2 to 4 players. It plays in about 20 to 40 minutes. It has a little bit of deck building and some dice rolling. Basically, you are different troops of bards, and it all has a kind of whimsical art style, like many of the other Junk Spirit games. And you are trying to create performances and recruit new bards and capture audiences. And you're going to lay down cards at the beginning of your turn, and they're going to give you certain dice. You'll roll your dice, and then you use those dice to activate cards, to acquire new cards for your deck, to get performance tokens, which you then turn in to get audience cards, which are going to give you bonuses and actions. It's a pretty quick game, not necessarily simultaneous.
There is some simultaneous things happening in the game, but it's a quick action selection, sort of trying to build the best bard throughout the game.
Yeah, and you have like singers and drummers.
Yeah, singers and dancers and illusionists.
Illusionists?
Yes.
Yeah, and they're like these frog characters. Yep.
Is it the same art style as? Okay.
So it's built in the world of Tessendor. And you're familiar with Junk Spirit Games, other games that they've had. So
yeah, very cool little world they're kind of creating there.
I would say this is probably one of my favorites of the games that they've done so far.
Yeah,
so.
Awesome.
Yeah, that is Battle of the Bards, coming January 21st. Sarah?
Coming January 23rd is the game Head Chef. This one is a family-friendly action selection game. The characters have their own unique abilities, and they will be using ingredient cards to make food, and then they can turn those in for points of fame. And your goal of the game is to become the most famous chef in your town. It plays in about 30 minutes, and it plays up to 4 players. And there's a couple different modes. There's a team mode and solo modes. And it has some fun artwork. And some of the game mechanics included are action selection, set collection. There's a little bit of hand management and just a little bit of push your luck. So that's coming January 23rd, Head Chef. Ryan, what are you talking about?
Well, coming January 21st is Newspeak. You may recall, if you're a longtime listener, that we have talked about Newspeak in the past. This is a relaunch. Their original Kickstarter, I believe they canceled it, or it might just not have funded. I don't know actually the details on that. But it's a 1984 themed game. Newspeak is the language that they speak in 1984, or it's a term for like the concept of black white, where you say one thing knowing that it's false, but you also completely believe it. Don't actually understand that concept, but it's big in 1984. Read the book, it's a classic. Anyway, so in this game, you've got, you know, secret identities, sort of, where there's moderators and there's like the dissidents. The dissidents are all trying to meet up at a set location, and they're using code words to meet up there, but the moderators get to hear the code words, and then after they've selected the location they're going to pick, the moderators get a code book, and they have to try to decipher where the dissidents are going. If at the end of the round there are more moderators than there are dissidents at a location, then the dissidents lose that location, I believe.
Interesting.
So you'll have to look it up yourselves. It does look like it could be pretty fun, so definitely check it out. Newspeak coming January 21st. Will, what do you got?
All right, I'm looking at The City, which is a reprint from 2011. It was, I think, published by Amigo originally, and it's coming out from Eagle Griffin now. It is a, obviously, city-building game. It's a card game, and the interesting thing about the game is that the cards that you're playing in the game have both your income and your victory points on them, and they're cumulative from round to round. So if you start off scoring well and you can build that initial hand to really get you some victory points started, then each round as those double and triple up, you're going to be scoring a whole lot more. First player to 50 victory points wins the game. It sounds like it's a pretty fast one. I haven't actually played The City, it's not like real time, but it looks like you're building really quickly. You're adding cards, discarding cards, and trying to get as much income, obviously, as you can for each round. And the more buildings you can put out, and I think some of the cards work in tandem with each other. Like if you have a bunch of schools, and then you add a university, you get a lot more points. So one of those, set collection in a way that builds you points based on which cards you actually are able to get a hold of. So that one's coming to Kickstarter on the 22nd as well, I assume. Just making that up. And then I'm tossing it to Kevin. What are you looking at next?
The City is actually on the 24th, Will.
Oh.
That's okay. But I
figured I had a 50% chance.
True. Two real quick mentions that are launching on January 22nd. Company Orange Nebula is bringing an expansion to their game Vindication, and then also Caper Games, who your boys really like the game Get Adler.
Yeah.
They're bringing a game called Wordopolis, and it is a word game that's not only going to be coming Kickstarter for the game board game version, but they're actually bringing it to have a free web and mobile game. So they're making it into a free web and mobile game. It's called Wordopolis, the word discovery game.
Interesting.
So, yeah, check out those two things on January 22nd. Melissa.
Well, another game coming out on January 22nd.
I feel like I had a good chance.
Sorry, Will.
Luck was not on your side. Well, this game is Aftershock, and it is being published by Stronghold Games,
a division of Indie Game Studios.
Mm. Yeah, so they're bringing a game to Kickstarter. This is designed by Alan Moon from Ticket to Ride fame and Bobby West, and it is for 2 to 5 players, plays in about an hour. Kevin and I have a copy of this, and we're going to be putting out a preview video. But it is a area control game that has a little bit of hand management. You have a map. The map that we had in the prototype was of kind of California area, and you're going to be collecting cards. Actually, you have to buy them with your money, and you can keep some of the cards from your hand, and then you're going to put the rest up for sale, and the other players can buy them. Kind of think sort of like Isle of Sky type of thing going on here. And then based on the cards you get to put meeples out onto the board for the area control. But then it goes into a phase where you have certain pieces that are hidden, and you will simultaneously use your hidden meeples and bridge pieces and assign them to certain cities in the on the board. So you don't know. It looks like you have the most people in San Francisco, but Kevin maybe put more on during the hidden phase of the game.
And he then, would.
Yes.
I did.
And then there are aftershock tiles that you can play, which causes these tremors and aftershocks and makes meeples move out of areas.
Ooh, interesting.
And if there are bridges there, they can travel on the bridges, and if not, they get taken off the board. So there's a lot of moving around the board and trying to affect where people go.
And
then the next phase is you actually figure out which areas are going to score. Maybe there's like 10 cities or so on the map, and you have 4 scoring tokens. You're going to secretly put them on 4 of the areas. But an area is only going to score if there's 2 tokens on it.
And or
you,
more.
Yeah, 2 or more. And you cannot double up on a city with your tokens. Okay. So you have to negotiate. Hey, Kevin, you have a lot of people in San Francisco. I have a lot of people If you put one of your tokens on San Francisco, I'll put my token on, and then this area will score.
Hopefully.
People do not have to keep their word. They can say whatever they want. So
they're, or they could forget.
Yes, like maybe I did, and I said I was going to do something and then didn't. Yeah. So there's a lot of like mind games going on.
And you only have four tokens, and you might want to score multiple cities. So you're talking to like four different, or you're talking to all the opponents trying to make deals. It's crazy.
Yeah, in each area that scores, it's going to have a certain number of points for the person with the most meeples there, and then the second most, third most, so on and so forth. So, you know, trying to get in on as many cities that are going to score as possible. So there's a lot of player interaction that's going on with the game.
There is one thing I did want to mention along with the scoring. There is an influence token that does allow you to add to one of your scoring tokens. So if you place your influence token plus your scoring token, but you have to buy the influence.
Oh, okay.
Then you are able to then score that when someone else may not have put their scoring token.
Yeah, that's one of the cards. Before, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's one of the cards that you can buy during the card buying phase, but they're kind of expensive.
Yeah, there's like I'm trying to like think it's like it's a totally different game than I'm used to because there are a lot of phases and you're revealing your. Throughout the round, you're revealing what you're doing, and you're hiding again, and you're revealing, and then you're scoring. And the game only lasts three rounds.
Interesting.
And if it's like a five-player game, it's like two rounds.
Wow.
So it feels like, oh, it's going to be quick, but it still probably lasts an hour.
Yeah, because it takes a while to decide where, okay, I have two extra meeples that I can put out hidden. Where's the best place? Do I think, oh, I know Kevin has an aftershock token. So is he going to shock me out of this area? Huh. Oh, I have.
Or shock yourself out.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
If you're like, oh, I'm not doing well here, I'll move myself out.
Cool. Lots of good options.
So, yeah, that is Aftershock coming on January 22nd by Stronghold Games. Sarah, what do you have?
Coming January 22nd as well is Ore the Mining Game. This is a reprint. It was originally done back in 2013. And Quick Simple Fun is bringing this one back in a reprint. And it'll be launching on January 22nd. Ryan.
Okay, so there's another game coming out on January 22nd. This is like a special date in my life. Because it's the 22nd and it's almost June, but not really. So it's almost my birth. No, I don't know. Anyway, that's how I remember.
Your 11th
January
birthday.
22nd. It's my 7/12th birthday.
Oh, 7/12th.
Really cool. Anyway, I don't know where I was going. Valor and Villainy, Minions of Mordak from Skybound Games and Druid City Games. Looks like it's going to be pretty cool. It's a semi-cooperative game. One player is taking on the role of the comedically evil wizard Mordak, and he's trying to take over the kingdom after the king has died in a tragic catapult accident.
Oh man, I hate when that happens.
So heroes are preparing for his return, and they have to fight him and his minions, apparently.
Isn't Mordak the name of the bad guy on, like, She-Ra?
I don't. Is that Mordak?
Something like Hordak. Hordak.
Hordak.
Oh, okay. There
and also not Modok. There's
right.
too many.
Oh, mix them together.
That's Marvel.
Anyway, so it is like a light RPG. I guess you gain experience from your actions and you sort of level up and you gain new abilities. And it's all in this procedurally generated map that you have with randomly laid tiles that you'll flip over. And on the back of a tile, it looks like there could be maybe a hut or like a well, you know, just different fantasy medieval locations. And you have to balance how quickly you go after Mordak, because on the one hand, you may be not as prepared to go up against him, but he won't have built up his power either. Or, you know, you could try to build up your power, but you're also letting him get ever so much more powerful.
Ooh.
So when exactly are you going to fight him? It does look like it's going to be a lot of fun. They've put a nice spin on the art, and just they're trying to play it all lightheartedly and comedic, they keep saying. So definitely check it out. It looks like it might be a winner. Valor and Villainy, Minions of Mordak, coming January 22nd.
All right, we want to look at one more Kickstarter. It's called Gardens of Babylon, and we actually have the publisher of the game, Rob Thompson, here as our next house guest. So let's welcome him to the house. Hey!
Thank you, guys. Thanks for the opportunity.
We're pretty excited. We got a peek at your board game that's coming to Kickstarter very soon. Why don't you just jump in and give us a quick rundown?
Yeah, so it's our first game. We're launching Gardens of Babylon on Kickstarter next Tuesday on the 22nd. It's a competitive tile-laying game. I mean, you guys played it. What was your thoughts? How would you guys describe it to the audience?
Yeah, so yeah, definitely a tile-laying game with this cool cascading mechanic with the different seeds and definitely some movement that you'd use your meeple. Yeah. So I think that's the key mechanics in the game. With how you're moving your meeples as you're, you know, after you lay your tiles, which is interesting that you don't see a lot of, games like that. So
no, I don't even know if we said the name yet. Have we said Gardens of Babylon?
Yeah. Gardens of Babylon. Yeah.
Gardens of Babylon from Cackleberry Games. And, yeah, so it's a 1-4 player game, correct?
Correct.
And
it looked really big. I haven't actually played it. Kevin and Melissa played it.
Yes.
The pictures that I saw of it make it look like it fills up your table pretty nicely. What is that pretty good?
Yeah, yeah. It has really good table presence. There's also we got feedback actually from from the community while we've been playtesting it, and we have both a shorter rule version, it takes up less tiles, and then a full version as well. So if you only have like 30 minutes to play, you can play that shorter version, and then you can also do the longer version as well, which takes about an hour for 4 players. And it really excels at 3-4 players, but it also has a solo rules included from the start, which we just named today. It's going to be called Supplant the King, based on King Nebuchadnezzar, to kind of keep it thematic. And that'll actually be included from day one of the campaign. And it's also a fun sort of 1v1 head-to-head game as well. Yeah.
Cool. Well, tell us how it came up with the theme for Gardens of Babylon. Was it always this garden theme, or was it...
Which came first, mechanic or the theme?
Yeah.
Yeah, so the origin of the game is, to give you the background, Cackleberry Games, 3/4 of our team actually worked in the video game industry. So we worked on games like League of Legends, World of Tanks, if you're familiar with those games. And while we were living abroad in Europe, we met a game designer named Stavros. We were on the island of Cyprus near Greece. And we were playing D&D with him, and he brought like 4 board games over to the house. He's like, hey, I happen to make board games. Like, okay, well, let's try them out. And he had Gardens of Babylon, and it was, you know, he had the theme fleshed out and the mechanics. It was really fantastic. And we're going to be releasing some design diaries that give the kind of full overview in the next couple of days. But the story was he saw the sort of 2D, 3D isometric projection of the cube. So it started with that kind of that image. And then he started thinking about what type of theme could fit into that image, and then started thinking about, okay, what type of mechanics would fit. So it actually kind of started with the isometric projection of the cube, and then that went to the theme, and then that led to the mechanics. He can speak to that, a lot better than I can, and he'll be writing these design diaries to go into that overview. But yeah, it's been fantastic. We then playtested it at UK Games Expo in June. We got really good feedback on the design from some playtesters there, and we headed over to Gen Con with the final art. And we did a lot of iterations, again, out of like the solo rules, out of the shorter version, and just to continue to try to improve the game. And just been learning all the ins and outs of Kickstarters and meeting folks like you guys and trying to both contribute to the community, but also learn. It's definitely a uphill battle trying to learn all these different nuances of how this all works. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Now, this is you guys' first Kickstarter campaign, is that right?
Correct.
Yeah, I think we got the preview of your page, and I got to say, well done on that. You guys really kind of covered all your bases well. I think you've got a good, concise summary of what the game is. I saw a lot of reviewers listed on there, so I think you guys definitely are headed in the right direction on that. I also really like the artwork for the game. Who did that? Was that you? Was that the designer? Where did that come from?
Yeah, so that was actually also an interesting story. We knew that we wanted something that was ancient themed, and we knew we wanted it to be architecture based for the Gardens of Babylon. So I just happened to search on ArtStation, like Mesopotamia, trying to look for beautiful landscapes, and I found this artist named Jeff Brown, and he's actually who we worked with for both the tile art which is really fantastic, and also the box art as well. And he is a Canadian artist that's based in Mexico, actually. And yeah, he was phenomenal to work with, and you know, definitely want to give a shout out to him for his you know, both the quality, but also just his ability to work really quickly, and just was extremely professional throughout the whole process. So I think we really got lucky with Jeff finding him on our first try. But
cool.
I definitely recommend to other designers to focus on what exactly type of element that you're trying to accomplish in the art. And for us, it was that ancient feel and looking for that artist who had that experience. And so we just tried to find other examples of people's work who had done that, and that worked out pretty well.
I think it does really come through on the tiles, especially. I think the way that those work and look together when they're all on the table is pretty excellent.
So the building of audience, I've seen that you've done a lot of that recently. What are some of the challenges that you've seen in building your audience for bringing this game to Kickstarter?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And it's really the way I've been thinking about the campaign the last couple of months is really a couple of areas. And you have the audience, you have the product, and then you have the sort of page and the business behind it, right? But mm-hmm. you know, that all kind of falls apart if you don't have one or the other. If you don't have the audience, then you know, it doesn't really matter what your page is or your product is. And then if you have an audience, but you don't have the right product, then you know, it kind of falls flat. It's been a difficult balance, but yeah, we've been doing as much as we can to get the game out there and try to engage as authentically as possible in the community and. You know, doing giveaways and giving people opportunity to play the print and play. Today, Stavros was actually in New York City doing a play test at Hex NYC. He'll be flying out to El Paso on Wednesday. He'll be doing playtests in El Paso, and then we'll also be doing some here in Las Cruces, New Mexico. So we have quite a lot trying to go on locally as well. So just trying to cover as much bases. There's a lot of information out there, you know, on how to build audience. And I think that it really, I think it depends on what type of game you're building. For us, it's a Euro tile laying game. We've been trying to do as much research, outreach as we can into the European market, as that's where Stavros is from. Mm-hmm. But then also trying to target, you know, Kickstarter backers who like these mid-style games. You know, we don't have miniatures, we don't have these higher end items, but we're trying to speak our message and focus on the strengths of the game is really what's been working well for us. Yeah.
That's very cool to hear that you guys are approaching an international audience. I think a lot of Kickstarter backers just kind of focus on the local stuff, then maybe go to Origins or something like that. But being able to hit, you know, both sides of the pond and have a much broader reach is really obviously going to help you guys out. Tell us a little bit about what the campaign is going to look like. I mean, we already mentioned that it's put together really well. Do you guys have some prices figured out or stretch goals that you want to kind of tease us about? What's it going to look like?
Sure. Yeah, I think in one thing, just to tie into what you just said about the international audience, one thing that's really, and this ties into the page as well, one of the areas that we really wanted to make sure we covered was to actually translate the game in as many languages as possible from the very beginning. So, you know, excited to share that, you know, from day one of the campaign, we'll have Spanish, French, Italian, and German, and English, of course, available, you know, fully translated by professionals from day one. Looking at how to get that into the game as well. We're really inspired by, you know, the Eurosonic Queen games and what they do and the quality they put into getting that kind of international reach. And so that's something we wanted to do, and that's something I can share about the campaign. Another element that, you know, we're going to have is a collectible King Nebuchadnezzar II exclusive metal player token, which is a really awesome collectible coin. So that'll be part of the campaign as well. The game will have a base version of $29, and we have some exciting stretch goals planned around both components and also looking at ways to make the game even more epic for those collectors out there. So sort of what I'll tease now.
So once again, the Kickstarter will launch January 22nd. How long will the Kickstarter campaign go for, Rob?
24 days. So it'll end on Valentine's Day as well. And so we're also gonna see what we can do there to end on a good note for those out there who have loved ones they want to buy the game for.
Yeah, I'm sure you'll get to do some extra celebrating as well.
That's great. So, tell our listeners where they can find out more information about Gardens of Babylon and Cackleberry Games.
Sure. So, you know, we have a Facebook group now. I think we're just closing it on 500 members. It's the Gardens of Babylon board game community on Facebook. I think it's probably the best place to find us. We're also on Twitter and Instagram, Cackleberry underscore games and Cackleberry BG. And yeah, look forward to launching our first game about 8 days from now. And thank you guys so much for the opportunity to come on here and tell your audience more about it.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm sure you're down to that wire where everything is getting real exciting. So we appreciate you spending a little bit of time with us and telling us about your game. We will definitely be looking for that on Kickstarter soon. Okay, one last question. I always like to sneak this in for our interviews.
I do not know what he's about to ask, Rob. I honestly have no idea.
I always like to know, on your shelf of shame, which game is still in shrink wrap that you have not yet busted out and had a chance to play?
Ooh, good question. I think it's Discover Lands Unknown. I picked that up. And yeah, I really want to check that one out. It has like the interesting
How many copies did you buy? Just one copy?
Yeah, just one. I didn't go overboard there. I bought it when I was traveling. But okay. we did just get the box thrown, so there's been a lot of unpacking games and sleeving and organizing without playing. So I kind of get away with a cheat of an answer. But like, if you asked me that question a couple weeks ago, you know, there was a lot more. Yeah.
Well, good. I'm glad you're making progress.
Thank you.
Take a break this week. See if you can bust that one out. Get it on the table. Have some fun.
Just gotta work on Kickstarter.
You need some
time for games too. It's important. There's a lot to go on, but. You know, it's definitely
the struggle is real. We know. Well, very cool. Thanks so much, Rob, for joining us. Best of luck with your campaign, and be sure to shoot us a note. Let us know what you guys finish and what you guys get that campaign successfully put together. We'd love to see a finished version and you know, maybe work together in the future.
Fantastic. Thanks again, guys.
All right. Have a good one. Bye, Rob.
Bye.
Bye. Well, this is an awesome show, but before we say goodbye to everyone, we need to talk about TantrumCon just a few weeks away.
I can't believe it! I am getting excited. It's coming. It's starting to feel real.
And one of the things we're doing at TantrumCon is a KeyForge tournament, and before my very eyes, I see three new packs of KeyForge decks.
We just opened them.
Man, what are you guys like jumping down the KeyForge rabbit hole?
We figured we got to get our feet wet a little bit before we get to the event. Need to know what we're talking about. Sarah just opened them. She's holding one in her hands right
now. So say some of the names.
So the one I opened, the Supreme Imp of Bookfield. This one happens to have like a super rare.
Oh, super, super, super rare.
What do we get?
Master of Two.
Let me see it.
Master of Two. What does it say?
Master of Two allows you to destroy a creature with two power.
Okay.
Let me see. If I knew what that meant, I'd be really excited.
How many of there are here?
just one.
Just one?
In the deck.
The Supreme
Super
Imp
Rare Star card. Bookfield.
I mean, there's Master one in the deck of that.
How do you know it's super rare?
It's a star.
It's
I don't
marked
know.
With a special.
They
star
either have like stars,
the,
circles, or what, diamonds? Is that what it is?
Yeah. Okay. On the card list.
Yeah.
In
so
the
it comes,
deck.
You get a little death list it that tells you all the deck pieces that you've gotten.
You need to register it. I've heard they have hundreds of thousands of registered decks already online.
Yes.
Hundreds
of thousands. One of the other ones we opened is E.B. Sanctum Mirror of the Melodic Heartland.
The Melodic Heartland.
I feel like Dolly Parton probably hangs out there, doesn't she? Is that that kind of looks like her. Just kidding. And our third deck, what do we get?
Our third deck is Brutus Solon Ooze.
Sounds messy. Anything cool in that one?
This one has a rare card called Yo Mama Mastery.
Oh, this will definitely be the deck that I'll be playing with later tonight.
That's right. It's got a Mind Warper.
Mastery.
And several others that I'm having a difficult time pronouncing.
Snufflegator. Do you really have a Snufflegator?
We have a Snufflegator.
The super rare Snufflegator.
And
is that like
Zizix the Mini. Grabber Jammer.
I've
heard some of these rare cards going online sold for hundreds of dollars.
Well, not the cards. You have to sell the deck.
Sell the deck. Yeah.
I'm willing to sell you my deck for $100 if you want it. Just let me know. Anytime.
Well, cool. So we're looking forward to that one. I think we've got three different KeyForge things going on. We've got kind of a learn to play and a like casual tournament and then a bigger tournament. I know one of them has prizes, maybe even cash prizes.
Yes, cash prizes.
And then the guys from Double Blanks. Nope, is that what they're called? I think that's what they're called.
Yep.
And they kind of have a couple different shows going on, actually. They have like Southern Fried Game Night and different things like that too. They're going to be joining us to do our GMing and to help run those tournaments, and I think Jason's getting in on that as well. And so if you haven't signed up for that, you can do that at tantrumcon.com. All of our events went live a week ago, and there's still plenty of things you can sign up for. Lots of play to win, learn to plays with us from Tantrum House. And
yeah, most of those are sold out.
Are they?
Because we're popular.
Some of us. I don't know. Sarah sold out like instantaneously. Yeah. She picked all the hot games.
I did. I picked the hot games that are a little harder to learn because I figured that people would appreciate having somebody teach them a more difficult game.
Well, cool. Thank you guys so much for joining us today for another podcast episode. I don't know if you caught it, but before we recorded this one, we did a YouTube live. And let us know if you're interested in that kind of thing, because that was a lot of fun to shoot. I enjoyed talking with everybody that was listening and with all you guys, which was always fun. And if you guys want to go see that video, I'm sure it's hopefully still on our YouTube channel. And we'll plan to do that again hopefully soon, maybe next Monday. So we'd love to have you join us there as well. And then hopefully we'll see you at TantrumCon.
It's only a month away.
I can't believe it.
Join us. TantrumCon.com.
All right. See you guys next time.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Tantrum House Board Game Podcast. If you liked any part of this at all, find and follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TantrumHouse.com. Like us, share us, email us, call us, or send us a postcard. Thank you.
Holmes, Holmes.
What is it, Watson?
I think we might have a new case. How can we help, Miss?
It's Mrs. Fields, and I need you to settle a dispute. We have a small home with room for one table. My husband wants a fancy gaming table, but I believe a dining table is more important. I'm sure you agree with me, Mr. Holmes.
What if I told you I could satisfy both your wishes?
I'd say that'd be astounding, Holmes.
The answer is the Holmes, or perhaps the Watson, depending on the size of your room.
You're not making any sense, old chap.
Those are the names of an ingenious product from Game Toppers LLC. The Toppers are a portable solution that turns your current table into a high-end gaming table at a fraction of the cost.
Do you mean to say that the topper can be put on and taken off the table with ease?
Absolutely.
Thank you, Mr. Holmes. You truly are as amazing as people say. I will take a look at Game Toppers LLC right away.